Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Offspeed Podcast. My name is Grace. I am your host of the Offspeed Podcast show, where we slow things down. We take a look at sports stories and sports around the world. This week, I am actually excited to talk about the New York Yankees. We're going to be chatting about the seven-part ESPN docuseries on Derek Jeter, the captain. I'm excited to be joined by two huge Yankee fans, the wonderful Brian Cohen of the Challenge Recap Pod, and Jordan Kalish, trivia extraordinaire. We'll jump right into it this week. We'll get into it. We'll talk about the captain. Lots to discuss. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jordan and Brian. Welcome back. We are here. We're going to talk about the captain, the ESPN seven-part docuseries about Derek Jeter. I think I might be a Yankees fan after watching seven episodes. Just kidding. Any Blue Jays fan who heard that, I was just kidding. But I'm joined by two very special guests. First, host of the Challenge Pod here on Rob Is a Podcast, Brian Cohen. How are you?
I'm doing unbelievably well, Grace. This is the greatest honor of my life. Everything that I've done in my life has built up to this moment, so I could not be happier to be here. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, you said when you were a kid, you wanted to grow up and be a guest on this podcast. You said it, and you've done it, and
yes,
now here you are.
In first grade, when I wrote on my little, what do you want to be? I'm like, in 30 years, I want to podcast with Grace about the entire life of my fandom as a Yankee. So that's it.
Well, we're not alone. We are joined by trivia expert, This Week in Survivor History, quiz extraordinaire, game master, Jordan Kalish. How you doing?
Oh, captain, my captain. We are here talking about my idol, Derek Jeter. I'm very happy to be here. Yankees have been struggling, so it was nice to see some clips of them in the good old days, winning World Series back-to-back-to-back. And, you know, it was, my childhood, too. It was a great time to be a Yankee fan. And it was good reliving some of those memories through this documentary.
Yeah, I'm surprised, actually. This is the first time you've been on the Offspeed Pod, I believe, right? Is this correct?
Yes, yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I've been trying to get you on, but you go to summer camp in the summer, so it gets tricky to book you, especially when we talk about our favorite sport. But Brian, this is your second appearance. Welcome back. I do like to ask guests when they make their first appearance sort of about their fandom history, their sports background. So obviously you're here because you're a Yankees fan, but if you have any other sports history background, your personal sports history, have at it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, for me, baseball has always been my number one sport. So Yankees are by far my number one team. I mean, I'm also a football fan. So Giants are my football team. Mm-hmm. I try to be a Knicks fan. They make it very hard for me to be a Knicks fan, but I will try to be a Knicks fan. So those are my three. My wife's went to Northwestern. So now I've adopted them as my college football team.
Yeah.
But it's really, it all funnels through to the Yankees, like everything else. That's really where, you know, this time of year is like, I try to block off as much as I can in the anticipation that maybe there'll be postseason baseball. But that is my life for sports is the New York Yankees.
Yeah. Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, baseball is my favorite sport as well. I played it growing up. I coach now, and I can't ever remember a time not being a Yankee fan. There's pictures of me as a baby at Yankee Stadium. So I was sort of brought up with it. I've definitely overtaken my parents to this point. They're definitely more casual fans. And in terms of other sports, I'm a Jets fan, love football, but like I could remember becoming a Jets fan. Rangers for hockey, that's sort of a recent thing. Knicks for basketball as well. But like Brian, it's kind of hard to watch that team, and I'm not the biggest basketball fan in the world. So yeah, those are my teams. But I would say that I bleed pinstripes, and it's been like that my whole life. Definitely grew up with posters of a lot of the guys that we saw in this documentary on my wall in my bedroom.
Yeah, I mean, I don't bleed pinstripes. I am a Toronto Blue Jays fan, but I do, you know, I'm like a history major. I have like a lot of reverence for like, I can respect what the New York Yankees are as a team. And like, I love baseball history and like, you know, those like the you know, Murderers Row from, you know, the 40s. And then, yeah, this dynasty, it's like Derek Jeter. I think it was very interesting. I think coming off the heels of sort of The Last Dance, which I think was a little bit of a stronger thing, but I also think Jordan is just has a little bit more of an interesting story, if that's fair, like sort of on the court and off of it. So I going into this, I was a little bit like, this should be interesting. Like, is it going to be boring? Like a little bit. And I found the series to be incredibly well-rounded. I think that, yes, certainly it's probably a glossier image of Derek Jeter than he'd get if this was not like co-produced by the Players Tribune, mm-hmm. which in the last episode, they're like, yeah, I created that thing. But I do think they touch on controversy, and they do talk about, like, you know, to the Derek Jeter welcome baskets, or I guess goodbye baskets of it all, his relationship with Alex Rodriguez. I thought overall the series was really good, really fun, and like did open up Derek Jeter in a way that like I've never seen him before. But Brian, what do you think overall about this 7-part docuseries?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was going to be more Jeter focused. Like, I don't know. I thought it was more just like general Yankee focus, especially like the first few episodes going over like dynasty years. I feel like that was mainly just about them winning, how they won the titles and how the Yankees like exploded again as like a brand and all the players exploded like for recognition. And then it kind of got a little bit more Jeter focused with like these like the A-Rod stuff. And I really liked the last episode where they kind of focused on his personal life, where that was a little bit stuff that I really didn't know about going in. So I really enjoyed that. But I mean, like, there was no way I wasn't going to love this. Like, they could have just like showed clips of games yeah. for 7 hours, and I would have been like, this is the greatest thing in the world. So I was always going to love this, and it was really good, as my dog liked it too. So I think it was super well done, I thought.
Jordan, what did you think overall?
Yeah, I agree. Derek Jeter is someone who's always had a very polished reputation, and he earned that reputation because he was in the spotlight for such a long time. And outside of the things that you brought up before, like the A-Rod, you know, you could call it a feud or whatever happened with the relationship. And yeah, there's the gift basket story. But I mean, he really for someone who was in the limelight for his whole career, being the shortstop of the Yankees, he had very few controversies because he was a good guy. And I think they get a lot into his upbringing with his parents, who seem like they were great role models. And, you know, they're two people who, you know, just your faces, you would see them at the stadium. There was a game where I was telling you this before, Grace, I was actually sitting a couple rows behind them once in the game, and I was, you know, trying to get pictures of them because I had seen them on TV, so I knew they were Jeter's parents. But we get to really hear from them, and I think they seem like they really were a lot of the reason why Jeter grew up to be the player and the person that he became. But yeah, it was cool to see. I mean, he's someone who is known for kind of giving, you know, stock answers to questions, which is why he stayed away from so much controversy. He never really gave too many quotes to the media. But in this documentary, I think he really opened up. We got to learn more about him as a person towards the later episodes, some of the struggles that he's had. He and his wife have had building their family, which I didn't even know about. So it was great just learning a lot about him. I mean, he's again, like by far my favorite athlete of all time. And like Brian said, it was great seeing some of those summary of their world championships as well, that I remember so well growing up. And I could also watch like hours and hours of YouTube videos of just clips from the 90s mm-hmm. and 2000s.
Yeah, it's kind of like I was surprised. I mean, so episode one is really like, you know, him as a kid getting drafted. I don't think I realized like how much he really struggled early on. The fact that he drops pretty low in the draft. They say because a lot of teams are taking college players instead of high school players. But he struggles. He's like really nervous. The fact that he like admits not only now, but like literally in the first interview when he shows up for the second scene, me like last season was tough and it was because I was homesick. Was like, I think really interesting, because I think you kind of, I as like not a New York Yankees diehard, kind of had this memory of him of just being like a superstar immediately, like being this young kid who comes up. But I thought it was very interesting to show how much he struggled early on. And the fact that he doesn't even play in the 95 postseason, and yet how like involved he gets in the team. I thought that was really cool stuff that just comes out of that first episode.
Yeah, because I mean, from the outside looking in, like he breaks right in, rookie year, wins rookie of the year, wins world championship. He's like one of the best players in the team. So yeah, you kind of gloss, you don't think about the struggles that he had going in. And I even liked how they kind of focused on what was really going on with the Yankees leading up to that, with how George Steinbrenner getting suspended, and how if he was still there, like maybe they trade him, they trade some right. of these other guys like they were doing in the past. So they really kind of hit on how this team and him in particular was able to allow to grow, which you don't really see, especially for the Yankees nowadays. Sometimes you don't get to see people want to chip off a lot of prospects, do a lot of these different things where you might not get to see these guys kind of grow and blossom. So to get that glimpse behind the scene of Jeter really struggling in the beginning, and you know, that defensive stuff always kind of stay with him all the way through sure. his career, sometimes a little, especially to the end. So to see him like open up his struggles in the beginning, and it really just highlights again for some of these prospects, like it is very hard. You know, the Yankees really only bought him out really once in the last like 40-50 years. Like it was just that one pocket of time in the early 90s, and they bought him out and they had this top draft pick and then hit it out of the park. You see a lot of other teams have, you know, first, second, third picks, and you know, they don't find guys like this. So
you look at that draft, it's pretty like, you mm-hmm. know, there's, you know, a lot of guys who bounce around a lot, you know, yeah. one guy who doesn't even make the majors.
Phil Nevin was a nice player. Yeah. I don't know if he should have been drafted ahead of Derek Jeter
yeah.
though.
Yeah. But it was just a fun scene yeah. though too, like seeing how the draft was done. I love
That was one of my favorite parts of the documentary. I've never seen that before. I didn't even know that they had cameras in the draft room back then. Yeah. When I mean, obviously it wasn't televised, but you just see the names going on like the old 90s computer.
Yeah. And them spelling out the names to people, like repeating like that. Like yeah. now there's so much information on players. I think now that the draft is like everybody's projected. So the fact that they're like, we're taking this guy and I'll have to spell out his name yeah, for right. you is like hilarious. Yeah. yeah.
And one of the top guys. It's not like he's like, you know, 20th right. rounder where you never heard of him. You think you would know who one of the top draft guys is going to be. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And one of my other favorite scenes, they keep cutting between the computer, and then Derek Jeter's like in his living room with his parents and his sister, who's like a little kid in the scene. And then you get to see her grow up when she's giving her her interviews in the documentary. I loved in the last episode where they're intercutting, mm-hmm. you know, Derek Jeter like hugging his dad and like on the phone waiting to hear who he's going to get drafted by, with then waiting for the Hall of Fame call, which of course everyone knew Derek Jeter was going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, even though whoever the one idiot was, he didn't vote for him. Mm-hmm. Should not have a vote, and the Hall of Fame vote should be public for that reason. But that's a whole nother topic. But I love the fact that you have, they go back to that scene in the last episode, and they show him hugging his dad after making the Hall of Fame. And he's just waiting nervously for the phone call. Because even though I'm sure everyone in the room knew he was going to make it, that there was a lot less uncertainty for the Hall of Fame call than there was for, when he was drafted. But it's so cool though that he grew up a Yankee fan. They talked about his grandma being a Yankee fan, and just to be drafted by that team and to have told his coaches, I'm going to be the Yankee shortstop. And then he just gets drafted by the Yankees, and it's really so many things in his career really just worked out perfectly.
Is it Jordan? You're a coach. Have you heard of this? Like the northern kids. So you haven't played the best players. You play less baseball. You haven't played the best players. That was like the thing that they were like, no, he's a northern kid. Like he's a winter kid. He's not gonna be able to like make it in the majors.
I haven't really thought about it in those terms, but I guess a lot of the players that you do see, you know, drafted are, yeah, you know, Florida, West Coast, California, Florida, where you could play baseball all year round. They showed clips from Kalamazoo, Michigan, where it's, you know, covered in snow. Yeah. So a lot of these kids will relocate mm-hmm. if their parents think that they're going to be top prospects, so they can be scouted by colleges, scouted by pro teams. So it does make sense. I mean, the coaching that I do is at a small private school. So, you know, we're not at the level where kids are getting scouted. But it does make sense. I just never really thought about it in those terms.
Yeah. Me either.
I mean, that was one of the knocks on Mike Trout coming in, he's a Pennsylvania kid, like, you know, it's rare to see someone like that be as good as he could be, and that's why he fell too. So yeah, it is pretty common that you would think, you know, you look to Florida, Texas, California. Yep. Those are usually the colleges that do well. It's very rare to see like a northern college for baseball do very well. So it all kind of goes in line.
And I guess the combination of not having played in college, like you really haven't seen him. If he went to, you know, he was a northern like Michigan kid and he went to college, then you could have maybe seen him play against guys at the next level. It was sort of, you know, it seemed like a lot of scouts. And who was the scout for the Astros? He was like a 40-year scout or something who retired because the Astros wouldn't take Derek Jeter. He was obviously proven right there. I think Jeter would probably be a better third base coach than Phil Nevin as well.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. You're so good. You can't convince your team to draft, so you retire because you feel like, what am I supposed to do? And they didn't include this, but I think a Yankee scout had one of like my all-time favorite lines about Jeter, where he was asked, like, there was concern about, do you think he'll actually like go to the big leagues or do you think he'll turn down and go to college? And he's like, I'm not concerned about him going to college. The only place this kid is going is Cooperstown. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time about him going in. I'm surprised they didn't have that scout on. Maybe he's not alive anymore. I don't know. But that was one of my all-time favorite quotes for Jeter going to his big leagues.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, I was going to say, it seemed like the Reds were another team that were looking into him. And I guess Barry Larkin was sort of towards the end at that point. And imagine going like Barry Larkin, Hall of Fame shortstop, being able to go from Larkin to Jeter. And I'm sure whoever the Reds scouts were.
They comp him to Larkin in the doc.
Yeah, and I'm sure whoever the Red Scouts were who didn't draft him probably have nightmares about the fact that they passed on Jeter. And I forgot who it was who they picked. I think it was someone whose name I didn't even recognize.
Yeah. The other piece that I was surprised, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but they did kind of like build in a lot, was the fact that he's from mixed parents, about him being like a black superstar in New York. Like, I did, as a kid, like, I definitely didn't think about that when I'm like 8, 9 years old, about him being like a mixed parent, a black superstar in New York. And it was really cool to see that perspective on him, because that's not really something you always like is your first thought of when you think of Derek Jeter, but like it obviously is. And for his childhood, like some of this stuff is he had to go through with his in school and his parents had to go through. It was a very interesting perspective to get that built in and how he navigated that, especially with the clubhouse, with like Gary Sheffield and Cheryl Williams, who became a really good close friend of his. Like, it's really interesting to see that side of him, and they really built that in really throughout the all 7 episodes. There was something popping up about that throughout the whole time.
Yeah, I thought that like Dorothy and Charles are like have some of my favorite stuff from the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Charles in particular just being such a dad, being like, I'm like, you got all your skill from me, like never letting him win. I thought it was so good. And then hearing like the, you know, from like the story that Dorothy tells of trying to get into this housing unit, and her dad goes, or sorry, her husband goes, and they say, no, we don't have any room. And she goes back and she gets in, right? Yeah, I think that I think what's so interesting is it's like, I think to the point of you're thinking like, you don't really, you know, don't think about it as him being like this Irish guy. And I know, like, what's the journalist, Jordan, who gets absolutely.
Oh, Wallace Matthews. Yeah.
I also love that they basically just like let his thing air, and then they cut to like Jeter or his sister or whatever, or his mom. It's so good. I mean, not what he says,
family.
But the reactions to like, just letting that stuff, like just letting them sit, was so good. But I do think there is this thing to Derek Jeter that he, you know, to the point of his, like, you know, the comments that he makes afterwards. I love the segment he talks about, you know, why he wasn't like as much of a like advocate for like social change. And he's like, that's just not how I wanted to do that. There's different ways I do that. Like if you look at the charity work that I do with the charity that I had since my like first season, the major leagues, I like built with my dad, like look at what we do. I do a lot of stuff. I didn't need to like do it in the way that everybody thought I needed to do it. And I also, I think that that's totally fair from like a person, like when we get episode one about the experience that he has about his friend or the one who was his friend who then says like, yeah, I don't believe in interracial marriage. He's like, dude, like that's, you know, have you not seen my family? You met my parents. And also like the looking, I think is such a thing that he talks about that he loves playing in front of people and how he sort of had to embrace like people looking at him and staring at him. It's just not stuff I think we'd ever heard about Jeter before. That's like, was so enlightening to like, that, you know, I think to the point of like, why, you know, some people would say, why didn't you use your like platform? Well, I think like, if you are from like any marginalized group, I don't think it's fair to be like, yeah, you have to use your platform in the exact way that I think you should use your platform, right? To like use your, you know, the post games, especially in the era that he like played in. I know like he retired in 2014, but he came up in like the 90s, you know? And so I just thought it was really enlightening. It made me appreciate him even more than I thought the like, because I think there is a little bit of like unwritten rulesness to like, you know, the baseball, you know, I think that there's one guy who talks about how it's its best and worst thing about baseball is that it's so rooted in tradition that like he not only fit that and then figured out a way to not only be like the face of the Yankees and to many degree like baseball, while also making sure that like he made space and time to like do social change.
Yeah. And obviously, like you said, Chris, you know, he came up in the 90s, he retired 2014, and even 2014, social media wasn't really that much of a thing. So like it's using your platform in 1998 is a much different thing than using your platform in 2022. You like Jeter can't just hop on his Instagram in 1998 and talk about things he wants to change in the world. Like, yes, like basically schedule a press conference or like a press release. Like it's a much different age to like really use your platform to do something like that, where here there's a lot more expected of people because it's such more easily accessible to do that type of thing, where it's just like one click and you can really, you know, go Instagram live and just start talking about something that you need to talk about. So like back in the day, like that's just not something that like people really could do or would do like or anything like that. So this is obviously a much different era.
I think even the way he ends up creating the Players Tribune shows that like even the way that he wants to enact social change, he managed to do it in a way that's like not even the like it is such a, it almost feels like a professional way.
Right. It's
like,
very much his way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. True, and it shows how long his career was as well, because he did start playing in the mid 90s in this era where, you know, there is no social media to, you know, fast forward to 2014, he's announcing his retirement on Facebook. That's how he decided to do it. And I mean, after telling Susan Waldman, of course, that he was going to retire. That was great. I love that he kept the promise to Susan that he was going to tell her first. And it was a pretty recurring trope in this documentary of people missing phone calls. There was like Jeter missed an important phone call at one point. George Steinbrenner missed the phone call from Jeter at one point too. And I think Cashman was talking about that. So I think a lot of the 90s and 2000s was just like missing phone calls, because that's how people communicated.
Right.
Jeter, you know, he announces his retirement on Facebook, but going all the way back to when he was a kid growing up, Grace, you were talking about how he used to get looks. He was, you know, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and they sort of talked about the subtle racism, where it might not have been as overt as other parts of the country. But, you know, he might get looks, he might get comments, he might get whispers, and he saw it all. And I wonder if like his, you know, him growing up with those eyes on him is what potentially, you know, was able to mold him into the player that he was, where he was able to have his best performances when there were so many eyes on him, because he had been watched his whole life. And when he's playing baseball, he's being watched for the reasons he wants to be watched. It wasn't, you know, unfortunately, when he was a kid, encountering racism because of the fact that he is biracial.
Yeah, and it probably was a key part of like one of the big things he talked about was keeping his circle small. Like this wasn't when he came up, this was, you know, 6-7-8 years past when Gooden and Strawberry were taking over the town, and they had all their, you know, drug and alcohol stuff to impact them. And like it wouldn't have been too far fetched for someone like Jeter coming up as a big player on the Yankees, having so much success, like gets in the wrong crowd, it can go horribly wrong. And obviously he kept his circle very, very tight. And I think obviously that was very much by design, and paid off pretty well for him in every aspect that he could hope for. So I think, you know, he had a lot of that instilled on by his parents, but I think a lot from what he had a lot to deal with growing up, I think that was part of his skepticism of letting other people in that he wasn't 100% sure on. And I think when you reach that level so quickly, that's probably the right thing to do.
It really seems like having Daryl Strawberry as a teammate early on was really good for Derek Jeter in his career, because it's almost like a reverse role model, right? It's a role model of what you don't want to become. But Daryl Strawberry at that point had overcome his drug addiction, at least at that point. I'm not sure exactly, what's gone on with him, since his career. But he was always a guy that, like, I think the younger teammates looked up to Strawberry, and even though he had these problems, he was able to overcome them. And he was, you saw when they had the brawl with Armando Benitez, he was the one who, like, just like gave him a punch to the side of the head and knocked him into the dugout, which I don't recommend, but if you're standing up for your teammates. So I think having a guy like that was a great asset for Jeter, and sort of showed him like this, it's like a cautionary tale. And Strawberry was able to kind of talk him through that in the early part of his career.
Well, there's the fight with, is it the Pedro fight, right? Where is it the Pedro fight? Because then why is he with A-Rod? So it's not the Pedro fight.
So no, that was the Mariners fight. I forgot who the pitcher was.
Doesn't matter. But yeah, that fight, I feel like, that's, him and A-Rod being friends, and sort of like A-Rod being like, I'm coming after you if like we get in a fight, and them laughing. And sort of like, again, these like unwritten rules of baseball, like you gotta have your team's back, and he's just like, it's not the way. He's like, I feel like he both takes things seriously, and also like, it's like, because he says this, I think, at one point in the doc, like, yeah, it's the most fun game. I had more fun than anybody ever. Mm-hmm. But like, I also take it seriously, and it's a game. And like, I don't know. I just think he's so interesting, and to the point of like, that you're making, Brian, about his like inner circle. That's like so much of where this A-Rod stuff comes up that they talk about, I think, in episode 3. And then I think it comes up again in 6 or 7, I think again at the end in 7, which is that, A-Rod is a good friend. They're buddies. But A-Rod shoots his mouth off to this reporter who quotes him directly. Basically, I'm not afraid of, you're not afraid of Jeter. You're not afraid of getting beat by Jeter, which like, to a degree, I can understand. Jeter's hit home runs, but like, it doesn't hit, like, he's not a home run hitter. Right. And so this, I think that's the point A-Rod's trying to make. I really hated A-Rod's defense of like, I wasn't actually trying to slack off. I was saying that it's any one of them that you could, like, he literally names two other people who is like, that's who you don't want to get beat by, right? So I just wish he would have owned up that, like, more so that it's like, yeah, Jeter's not good. Like, I'm not as worried about Jeter hitting like a 3-run bomb than I am that like O'Neill or whoever hitting a 3-run bomb. But it does seem to be the thing that like sort of a Jeter has this mentality that like, if you burn me a couple times, like it might not even be once, you might get 2 chances, but if you do it twice, you just don't get to be in my inner circle anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I need to survive and be good and cope with pressure and all of this stuff. And I just thought that was really interesting. I feel like A-Rod getting to like that thing being there is like very fortunate that he's like, I wasn't saying that. I think that's what
A-Rod, I found A-Rod a lot over his career, like whether it's broadcasting or when he was a player. I think A-Rod's a little bit of a phony, and I rooted for him as a Yankee. Obviously, him playing well helped the team. Even through the steroid thing, when he came back, I wanted him to do well. But I think that A-Rod, they show it, like they talked about Jeter wanting to be a champion, A-Rod wanting to be, wanting to be the star, like a star player, wanting to be an icon. And I think because of that, he had some moments where he just sort of put himself ahead of baseball, maybe ahead of the teams that he played for, and like giving a team like the Yankees bulletin board material is never a good idea. Mm-hmm. And you talked about, Grace, how Jeter's inner circle, and I think trust is such a big thing for him. They talked a lot about who he can trust, who he trusts in the documentary, and I think there's very few people who he really trusts. And you go to that fight with the Mariners. Chad Curtis comes out, and Jeter's not even mad that Chad Curtis, had an issue with how Jeter handled himself during the brawl. His issue was that Chad Curtis brought it up in front of the media, brought it up in front of another, in front of other people in the public. Same thing when he and Cashman had the contract negotiations, he didn't like that. Somehow, whether it was Cashman, whether it was the front office or whoever, brought it to the media, it became public. He doesn't like when his private business becomes public, and he won't trust you ever again if you do that. So
it's so funny that that's like the biggest controversy. It's like, I wanted to stay in New York and it got leaked. Yeah, like, right. The number got leaked. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that, so it's so interesting with the Aaron thing, because obviously, like, from like a Yankee or a baseball perspective, like a Jeter documentary is good and it's entertaining. But like, if you want like a full scale, like 7-part documentary to detail someone's life, Alex Rodriguez would be a wild 7-part documentary to really go through and like to see like how these two like intertwine with each other, like from A-Rod's perspective coming into the Yankees and stuff like that. And they did, I know ESPN did like one of those 30 for 30 shorts of the A-Rod trade to Boston that fell through, which is really cool. I don't know if you
have, I have seen it. Seen it.
Yeah, yeah, it's really cool. But like to really get into more of the A-Rod side of it, like that's like, that was what I was probably most, outside of like watching the cool highlights and stuff with Jeter's career, like that was what I was most looking forward to from this documentary. Because that would say, I would say that's probably the one big knock on Jeter was how he ingratiated A-Rod into the team, or lack thereof, and like how they never really seemed to like mend fences and like seem to get on the same page. As much as they want to try to pretend that they did, like it's very clear that they didn't. You can just kind of sense like the animosity they still kind of had with each other. So to see the A-Rod stuff, I thought was pretty interesting, but it's something that I felt they, I wish they dove more in. And I think if they did it from the A-Rod's perspective, he would be more willing to do it, that Jeter just still really doesn't want to get beyond like surface level stuff with it.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, that potential trade to the Red Sox is such a sliding doors moment that like you think about like getting traded a year before the Red Sox comeback, like Manny was going to go back to Texas and that deal. I think Garcia Parra gets traded the next season.
Middle of 04. He wasn't on the World Series team.
But that's so interesting, right? Because they're trading for a shortstop, right? And Garcia Parra's been there for forever. Like, it's so, like, boy, that's so interesting. And I think somebody says in the doc of like, that would have been the thing, like from the league's perspective, like, yeah, don't you want, like, I think A-Rod says it actually. Don't you want A-Rod in Boston and Jeter in New York? And every time they play against each other, it's like the two shortstops against each other. It's pretty fascinating.
But it wasn't the league. It was the Players Association.
Yeah.
But that's because that's what makes A-Rod so interesting, because it's like, yes, he wants, like, he tries to like juggle why they'd be two things. I do think he really did want to win so badly. Agreed. But then he also had this like devil on his shoulder being like, he's just such a stupid person sometimes. he just can't help himself with things he does. And it's like the picture with him in the mirror and like the things he says about Jeter. Like, he just can't help himself sometimes. But I do think he wanted to win. And then I think he also got caught up in like with signing with the Rangers of like wanting to make the most money because he was the best player. And if you like, you just take out everything that he did, obviously you can't do that, but if you take out all the steroids and stuff, he is one of the five best players in the history of baseball. Like, bar none, he absolutely is. So like, he could have been all that and more if he just like toned it down by like 10%, 20%, some of his like off the field just shenanigans. And it's just like, he was so good. He couldn't stand that, like, looking at Jeter, who was a lesser player than he was winning and getting all this attention, and he just couldn't help shoot off at the mouth and make some stupid comments, and he just couldn't let it slide.
I love a couple of things. I love A-Rod being like, we need each other. I needed to get my first ring and Jeter to get his fifth, which is like very telling, I think, like that A-Rod, you know, he's still counting, right? Like, he's counting numbers. But I love the scene where he's been traded and they're playing a game against, they're in Chicago and it's rain, you know, in the rain delay, and apparently everybody leaves the dugout. And it's just A-Rod, and A-Rod's like, and it was like a movie. I sat down and I was like, are we good? Are we good? And then they cut to Jeter towards, he's like, yeah, I don't really remember. It probably was raining. So it's like no memory. Everything to A-Rod again is just like, I don't know. It's like a movie, whereas like, I think Jeter just like is like, yes, probably in a movie, like the like his life is written as a movie. Like, you think about all the stuff that's like in there, that, like, you know, winning four out of your first five seasons, right? Like you know, the flip, the play, I've never seen that play since, you know. He's like, I'm just doing what you're supposed to do. And it's like, I don't think so. Nobody, I've never seen anybody else do this play.
Maybe in spring training, maybe they say if there's an overthrow from the right fielder and he it goes over both cutoff men, the shortstop is the last line of defense. But in reality, nobody else is making that play. He talked about it, and this is something when I coach that I try to teach to the players. And again, at the high school level, I teach JV baseball. It's never going to happen even close to the level that it does at Major League Baseball. I'm not even talking about talent. I'm just talking about the mentality. And what I teach to them is know what you're going to do before the ball is hit to you. Or if the ball is hit, know if you're the cutoff man on this play. So I try to do it at a very simple level. But Derek Jeter is like a baseball savant. So I think there are very few shortstops in the history of baseball who would even make that play. And he was in an opportunity to make it, and he made it.
And also,
Jeremy Giambi, why didn't you slide? Come on. Yeah, I'm happy you didn't, but it's an insane play.
And then his 3,000th hit being a home run, the like walk off in his final game. Like, it's just like, boy, it just feels like somebody wrote it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that like he walks through it like he's not famous to, right? And I think like to come back to A-Rod for a second, it's like A-Rod so desperately wants to be in that movie, you know? Yeah. He so badly wants to be the star of that movie, and it's just not. Is it because Jeter lives his life that way? That means this? Yeah, probably. Like the fact that he's just so much more, I mean, gosh, this just saying, yeah, A-Rod's kind of dumb. I think like he's very baseball smart and just like not like, right. You know, celebrity smart, maybe. Is that is probably the best way to explain A-Rod. But I was just, pretty much a full episode on, well, not I guess the full thing, but like, and then the last episode, there's this whole like, yeah, and let's talk about A-Rod again. I was like, oh, really? The last episode? Or you're like, see if it's wrapped up, which the answer is no. He's like, I'm not really friends with him.
No, it was pretty awkward when Jeter was on the K-Rod cast. It was last week, and it still seems a little icy. Like, and I think that A-Rod, though, he's such a people pleaser, you could tell that he's trying to ingratiate to himself to Jeter, and Jeter's just pretty much like kind of like deadpan the whole time, and he's not saying anything wrong. But it's clear to me that maintaining this relationship, I think, means a lot more to A-Rod than it does to Jeter.
Definitely. And it was weird. There was this brief moment of time, like 3 or 4 years ago, I think they kind of touched on it with Jeter when he took over the ownership for the Marlins, and he, you know, doing the same thing that the other owners had done, where they stripped down the team, like, and he was getting some hate for that. And then A-Rod, just at that time, was starting to make his name as a broadcaster. And there was this weird, like, 6-month period where it seemed like A-Rod was more liked in, like, the baseball world than Jeter a little bit. It was a very fleeting moment. Yeah. Now it's gone. But, like, there was this brief moment of, like, 6 months where A-Rod was, like, this hot new broadcaster. Jeter was, like, this disgruntled owner who was stripping the Marlins of all their talent. So A-Rod had that 6-month period where he was, like, maybe the more popular one, even just amongst baseball people. So A-Rod could point to that moment in time.
Yeah, I think part of it too is the first trade. It wasn't just that he traded Giancarlo Stanton. He traded Giancarlo Stanton to the Yankees for like Starlin Castro and what was it? Martin Prado, was he in that deal? Was that the Eovaldi deal? Maybe, I don't remember, but it wasn't a lot of big names, but it was really just to clear the huge contract. Yeah. But then if you look at it, I mean, I, as a Yankee fan, I'm happy we have Giancarlo Stanton, even with some of the injuries. And you know, when he's playing, you know, he was the only person who hit for us in that game against the Red Sox, the wild card game last year. But from the Marlins' perspective, they couldn't afford Giancarlo Stanton. They had like nobody else on their roster. Christian Yelich, yes, he goes to the Brewers. He's fantastic for like 2 years, but he's had a downturn. And, you know, they made the playoffs in 2020. And yes, it was an expanded field because of the pandemic, and it was a shortened season. But still, they were a team that really, I don't think, had any business making the playoffs, you know, that few years into the rebuild, and they did. And they've taken a downturn since. But I do think that Jeter was looking at the big picture and making moves with the, you know, I'm sure anticipating that he was going to be with the Marlins organization a lot longer than he actually was.
Yeah, I mean, the Marlins team, they do have some, they have good pitching. Jess Chisholm, who's looks like he's gonna be quite a good player. That trade is Starlin Castro, Jose Devers, who I think played last year for the first time. I think he got called up, and then Jorge Guzman.
Rafael Devers.
Guzman is a they got released and is with the maybe traded again, is now with the Giants. So that trade is like nothing, but it's all salary cap. And to the point, they do make the playoffs in 2020, and they talk about like, well, it's 2020, and he's like, yeah, I don't care, who cares, we made the playoffs, which I think is fair. But I think they could be good not too long, so it's too bad that he like walked away. He's not with the team anymore.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I really liked the episode on the, like, because if on the 9/11 season, the 2001 season, because I think that what's so interesting about that is that so much of the rest of Jeter's career, as I said, feels written like a storybook. And if there's one that should have been, it's like, boy, the year that like 9/11 happens should have been the year that the Yankees win the World Series. And yet they, like, they lose. And that was, that's also the one where they do the Yankees Red Sox.
Yeah. It was the same episode. I got to admit, I did do maybe a little bit of fast forwarding through.
No way.
That episode. I have not since 2001, since the Luis Gonzalez walk-off single. I don't think I've seen a replay of that play. Every time I see it coming on, like, I'll turn the change of channel, block my face from it. I can't.
I'm like a masochist with that. I watched that inning so many times. Oh. Like the non-double play that Brosi doesn't throw, Rivera throwing it away, the Tony Womack double down the line, the hit by pitch, Luis Gonzalez. Like, I have that thing ingrained in my head. I don't know why. I just, like, because you know what it is? Because, like you said, Grace, it was like the one where everyone wanted the Yankees to win. It's like the great irony of baseball. Like, normally everyone's rooting against the Yankees, and the one time that everyone's rooting for the Yankees, they blow it and lose. It just makes baseball, like, so poetic and beautiful. Like, that's the one that they would lose. But they have, like, the great walk-off wins at when they're home, for everyone who's celebrating in New York, like, to have those both big moments. It's just, it was kind of the great irony. But I did love every single time they touched on it, Jeter, he's still upset about it. Right. Like, 2001, he notes it. 2001, 2003, 2004. He still notes it as, like, those are the ones that should have been. And, like, that's all you really want from, like, when you're rooting for a team, you're like, you know, really, they don't care as much as we do. Like, they're getting paid millions of dollars. They can go off and live their amazing lives. But, like, you want them to care as much. And he really did. Like, he still holds those losses so near and dear to him, which is really all you want from, like, a fan's perspective. You want them to care so much because you know you care a lot, so you just want them to care. And Jeter, you know, 20 years later, still really is pissed that they blew it in 2001, that they didn't beat the Marlins in 2003, that they blew it to the Red Sox in 2004. Like, he still resents it to this day.
And Brian, I think that goes back to Jeter being a Yankee fan. Before he was a Yankee, he was a fan of the team. He loved the Yankees. He grew up with them. And I completely agree with you. Like, watching him, you could see the pain on his face. In 2001, I mean, I think two of the, like, outside of, you know, like, terrible things happening and, like, you know, people, you know, like, family members passing away, like, 2001 and 2004 are two of my least favorite, like, my worst memories from my childhood. 2001, I was 11 years old. I remember going crazy when Soriano hits what we thought was going to be the go-ahead home run, and he probably would have been the MVP of that World Series if the Yankees held on. But oh my god, and like, Mo comes in, and the only thing I had ever experienced as a Yankee fan to that point, I mean, my first year that I really remember was 96. Like, I have missed some memories from being at the stadium in 95, but I didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah.
My first news story that I ever really remember as a kid, I think, was Mattingly retiring, because I remember that being a big deal, but I never really remember him playing. So I knew 96, 97, obviously they you know, they didn't make it. They got beat by the Mariners. But 98, 99, 2000, I didn't even think it was possible at that point for the Yankees not to win the World Series. And the fact that they were even in Game 7, they had lost one World Series game in the previous three World Series. They were 12-1. And now they're in Game 7, but then they take the lead. Mo's on the mound. I'm like, okay, it's Mo. The Yankees are going to win.
They say that in the doc. Like, yeah, we got Mo. Yeah. Fine.
And then 04, obviously, that was just against, and the fact that it was against the Red Sox too. And I mean, that ALCS was basically like the World Series. And I thought the same thing in 2003. Yankees don't go on to lose to the Marlins. But like that 03 season, I don't look at as like a failure, even though they, you know, the goal is, of course, always to win the World Series because they beat the Red Sox in such epic fashion in the 03 ALCS. So, but 04 and 01 are the two that are really the most painful, and then 2017, especially knowing that what the Astros did to win that series, and Altuve stealing the MVP from Judge because they cheated, but that's a different story.
I really like, so I love, I think one of the things that became very memeable about The Last Dance was how like competitive Michael Jordan, like we all knew he was competitive, but then like some of the reaction shots they get, and I think are perfect. I think my favorite moment of the whole documentary is when I can't remember who it is, but somebody is saying, one of the teams that lost to the Yankees is saying, yeah, we were the better team, you know, just got like unlucky. And Jeter's like, isn't that what losers say? Isn't that losers say that they were the better team and they got unlucky? Like, oh, we should have won. And I feel like he says that. I feel like, although he says later, like, those are the ones I think about, I feel like he doesn't, I don't feel like he's saying like, oh, we should have won. It's like, I really wanted to win. I feel like I love the sportsmanship that comes off of Derek Jeter because he's so frigging competitive, and the way he just like, because I love the line of like of just like, yeah, that's what losers say, is that we were the better team but we got beat or whatever, we got unlucky, and him just and so I you know, you could say at the end he's like, those are the ones I think about, but I don't think it's from a like, oh, we were better, or he just wanted to win those ones so bad. I think especially 2001, I just think like, yeah, you want to win the World Series in New York after like the most horrific event in like modern American history, you know? So yeah, I thought that that episode is like, is sad, but I think it tells us like, it tells me almost more about Jeter than like almost like any of the seasons where they went, right?
It's sort of like a more humble version of Michael Jordan, whose like favorite line was, oh, I took that personally. Like, I think, right, Michael Jordan, and he completely, I think, earned the ability to be sort of full of himself because he's Michael Jordan and he's, you know, arguably the best basketball player of all time. Jeter's not the best baseball player of all time. He's my favorite, but you know, no one's arguing that Derek Jeter is the greatest ever. But Jeter's, you know, Jeter's the thing of like saying that he likes to, you know, he's always with the first person to say, oh, I told you so, or he kind of had, some similar aspects to Michael Jordan in terms of taking things personally, like the Eric Chavez comment about how the Yankees just won a couple World Series and now it's their turn. And then they go on and they take the last three games of the series. And I believe that's the flip play series. So there was that. And I think there was the Jimmy Rollins comment on one of the late night shows. So there definitely were some aspects of maybe Jeter isn't, you know, maybe Jeter's whole story isn't, oh, like, you know, I took everything personally. I think he does, you know, put a lot of this stuff in his back pocket and you know, he uses it to not just motivate himself, but to motivate his teammates too.
I think Jeter's thing, it seems like from a lot of those comments, from the Chavez comment and the Jimmy Rollins comment, were just like, you're not allowed to talk smack until you win a little bit. Mm-hmm. It was like, it feels like, and you know, he's won a lot. So it's like, you know, and I think that's, you know, we're talking about the A-Rod, like why A-Rod, I think, is jealous of Jeter is just because like, yeah, Jeter won a lot. And he's like, yeah, he's probably not as good, but he knows how to win. And so I think a lot of those, the stuff that like really stuck with Jeter is when people would be like, yeah, but like we're good. I think Rollins says, oh, we'll give him,
Yeah,
but we'll do it in six so we can win it at home. And he's like, you haven't won yet. Like, that's not the way to talk smack. It's like, I mean, Jeter doesn't even talk smack.
But Rollins is right. It was a six-game series.
You know, because I've seen a lot of chatter about how, like, you know, there's obviously the big notion about Jeter being, like, overrated. Like, he obviously, you know, like you said, Jordan, he's not the greatest shortstop of all time. He's just not. Like no one would reasonably say that, but the idea that people just they're like almost treating him like he was like a nothing player. It's like very bizarre.
No, because he's a Yankee and people love to hate the Yankees. Nobody actually believes that either. Nobody thinks that Jeter's a bad player or even that Jeter's a bad shortstop. Is he the greatest defensive shortstop? No. If you use a lot of the metrics that are used today to rank shortstops, he's probably not like in the top half. But you look at some of the plays that he made in big situations. It's like the clutch plays. It's running into the stands to catch the ball. It's the flip play. It's almost like, it's not really intangibles because it's still physical play that you're doing at shortstop. But if it's game seven of the World Series and Derek Jeter's at shortstop and a ball's hit to him, you trust him to make that play. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could say the same about a lot of other players who are maybe even better fielders than Derek Jeter from a metrics perspective. Like I completely trust Derek Jeter to make the plays that need to be made at the end of an important game.
Yeah. And people always say like, oh, you know, if he was, you know, in Kansas City, like he wouldn't be talked about like nearly as much. It's like, yeah, well, you know what? Yeah. Like there's a notion of like, you try to rewrite history to like fit what narrative you want to fit. Like, yeah, he wasn't in Kansas City. He was in New York. He won, you know, five championships. He was one of the biggest stars in baseball. If that's what happened. Like you can rewrite his history and be like, oh, what if he was drafted by the Reds and he never made the postseason? Yeah, sure. He's not thought of as Derek Jeter. But that's not what happened. He was drafted by the Yankees. He won four in his first 5 years. He won again later. He's one of the greatest shortstops ever. Like that's who he is. Like he's top 10 in hits all the time. Like you can try to rewrite the history of him to fit the narrative that you want him to not be as great or as prominent as he is. But like this is just what happened. Like this is who he is. He performed in the playoffs. Like he did all this stuff. Like you can't like say, like, oh, well, if this didn't happen, sure. If things sucked, then he wouldn't be as good. Like that's correct. You know what? If he was bad, he wouldn't be good. Like, that's just what the fact of the matter is. And he was great. That's just the bottom line.
I mean, he's pretty good in 2012. We were talking about this, Jordan, that I think he leads the league in hits in 2012. Yeah. 2013, he gets injured. In 2014, he's like, yeah, I'm going to be done playing. And is he pretty bad defensively that year? Like, yeah. But
and offensively, it's not a good year for Jeter in his life.
Well, I mean, it's 256. Like, you know, like, what? You know,
it's not terrible.
He's not terrible. He's below average, but whatever. But he's friggin' Derek Jeter. He's 40 years old. And he's playing in his last season as a Yankee. And look how many, like, you know, there's a bunch of players who get, like, the last year treatment. Albert Pujols being the only one who's just like, actually, I'm going to be, like, really freaking good.
Needed to stay with the Cardinals his whole career. Going to the Angels is a big mistake. Everyone goes to the Angels and then it's like, well, why even go to that franchise? Brian, you kind of reminded me, like, you were talking about how like everything worked out so well in Jeter's career and everything was sort of like kind of like a movie, kind of like perfect. You know, Michael Kay had a call on Jeter's last at bat at Yankee Stadium when he had the walk off single, and he said Derek Jeter where fantasy becomes reality, and that was sort of Jeter's career. It was like if you wrote a story about a baseball player that had the career that he did, it would be criticized because it wouldn't be believable. And And it sort of reminds me of like, you know, when a player, you know, hits a right field porch shot at Yankee Stadium or any stadium that has like, you know, shorter dimensions and you hit a home run and they're like, oh, that's not a real home run. It's a Yankee Stadium home run or a Fenway Park home run. Guess what? That's where the game is being played. That's what you had to do. You met the condition to hit a home run on that at bat. Derek Jeter. That's what happened. Like you said, Brian, he played for the Yankees. He won with the Yankees. He won five championships with the Yankees and he was a star. He was an icon in New York. That's his career. He didn't play in Kansas City. He didn't play in Cincinnati. And I don't know why people have to like take, I think a lot of it is jealousy, not just jealousy of what he did as a player, but jealousy of the fact that if you're a fan of the other team, you want to have a Derek Jeter. You want to have that guy who becomes an icon and basically is the face of your city for 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, they talked about this in the doc too, that like, yeah, there's a lot of people who crumble under the New York, like playing in New York. Like I sort of love, I feel like every good doc needs this, like, here's a bunch of like random celebrities or people who are from here who are just going to like talk about something about like, not even really about, because this is the one where they're, When they move Yankee Stadium, I feel like we get the whole scene of like the woman be like, "Am I wedding at a table that was called Yankee Stadium?" It's like, okay, sure, cool.
I can tell you about my bar mitzvah. I was at my table was the me and my best friends were the Derek Jeter table. All of my all of the kids were at tables that were named after current players. So at the time, it was like Jeter, Soriano, Clemens, Bernie Williams, Posada. The adults were all at Yankee Legends table. So it was like the Babe Ruth table and the Mickey Mantle table. Wow. So yeah, I really related to that that comment as well. I thought that was great.
Yeah, but the point is that like, yeah, there's a lot of people who like could not play in New York City. And Jeter not only plays in New York City, but like, yeah, the face of the franchise for 20 years. So
Sonny Gray.
Yeah, Sonny Gray. Yeah. I just want to touch quickly on the end. I do love the piece at the end, you know, that we do get, you know, the story of him becoming a family man. Talking about, I love him sort of admitting, like, I was jealous when people had kids in the locker room, but like, that just wasn't me. I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So that him getting to have a family afterwards, him having three girls, Hannah sharing sort of how difficult the pregnancies were. It's almost like, you know, yeah, he like struggled, but like, you know, to the extent that like a Major League Baseball player struggles. And these are like real, you know, scary stuff. So the fact they open up about that, and also like becoming owner of the Marlins. And I think he gets, like I've never, you know, thought about like, yeah, they hired the first female general manager, his COO eventually, someone who I think was the highest ranking baseball official at the time, at that point too. Like, yeah, he did make progress. The fact of like starting the Players Tribune, a really cool thing. I think I really, really love, there's been so many good articles that have come out, of that. He's had a very successful, sort of post playing career, even, if the tenure with the Marlins doesn't end exactly how probably, he would have wanted it to.
Yeah. I really loved hearing from Hannah. Like, I don't think, I can't even recall an interview with her before. Like, I don't think I even knew what her voice sounded like, honestly, before this documentary. I really, really enjoyed seeing their dynamic. It seemed like she was like the first person that could like tweak him a little bit too. And like get under his skin. And like, he's going to take it. Like, it's much different dynamic than like A-Rod tweaking. So like, I love seeing their dynamic. I love their wit that they and their jokes that they have between each other. I love seeing Jeter as a dad. Very funny that he said, like, of course he's gonna have all girls. I think he has two or three.
I think he has three girls, right? Doesn't he?
Three girls. I like all. Like, he posts clips about them like on Instagram and Twitter now. Like, it's very cool to see this side of Jeter, because like you said, like this was just not in his cards. Like, he had a lot of different girlfriends in time that like through his career, like, he can go through the list, but like, he was never going to have this part to be part of his life. And it's just very cool now to see it play out. And yeah, his Marlins time was interesting. I think all this is now just setting back to whenever he wants and the Yankees feel appropriate, he will find his way somehow within their organization in some regard. I don't think he will. I don't think he should try to be like the general manager type. I feel like that's setting himself up for disaster. I think, you know, special advisor to the Cyberwriters or something like that, like a more permanent position that he could be part of the team. I feel like now the clock is officially ticking on that, when it will happen. But like, seeing him as an owner and seeing the behind the scenes with Hannah was very cool, because we really haven't seen any of that since Jeter retired. He's kind of just been poofed out of the spotlight for the last like 6 or 7 years. So that was fun to see.
I love Dorothy saying he lets his hair down even though he lost it many years.
Yeah, that was great. I really think, and I said this to you before we recorded, Grace, I think Dorothy Jeter's mom is one of the breakout stars of this documentary. I think it was so cool hearing from her, and she has like the, you know, classic like New York-y like / New Jersey accent. And she seems like she's just, you know, she's able to kind of like make fun of Jeter too, just sort of like Hannah, like his wife. Brian, I would love to see Jeter, becoming a bigger part of, I mean, he's always going to be an enormous part of the Yankees. Like, he could have nothing to do with baseball for the rest of his career, and he's going to always be synonymous with the Yankees. But to have an active role with the Yankees in the front office, sort of like a Reggie Jackson, sort of like maybe he's a guy on Yes, like that would be great as well. I think it would just inject a lot of energy into the franchise, and I would like to see him in a role where he's, again, not the GM. I think you want someone who has experience, you know, more experience building a team. But if he's kind of a person there, maybe who's even on the field at spring training as an advisor, he could just, I think, bring a lot of energy and bring a lot of that winning culture back to the Yankees. Maybe it's what they need. Maybe it's what they've been missing. I mean, he came up, in 95, he sat in the dugout sort of as a fan and watched that World Series, his first season as an active player. They win the World Series for the first time since what was it, 1978. He retires, you know, they win five World Series with him. The last one was 09. He retires in 14. They haven't won one since. They've had a lot of good teams, but it always seems like they're missing something. And I'm not saying having Jeter as an advisor, like, it's obviously a lot more important to have the players who are actually playing the games, but it can't hurt like to bring someone like that in. If he wants to do it, I think they should definitely allow him to. And I also agree with both of you that he did make a, you know, the transition from Zaddy to Daddy very seamlessly. That could have been the name of the documentary.
That's the name of the episode.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Can I switch? Is Michael Kay as like prolific as like I feel like he is? I just think like, not only do I hear him all the time, but I also think he's just like so good. Is that the perception of him like amongst Yankee fans too?
I think he knows the moment. Like I think he can craft like the big line for the big moment. He's definitely he's been a great broadcaster. It's starting to like pass him by a little bit. I feel like there's other guys I'd rather see them start taking over. Like Ryan Rucco, I think is great that the Yankees have. But Kay knows the moment. Like he knows how to like build the anticipation for the moment. He knows how to craft the line like for Jeter, as we talked about Jeter's 3000th hit, Jeter's walk off. Like those are just incredible line calls. Like obviously, like he's especially with the 3000. I'm sure he's crafting that ahead of time. But even the walk off hit was beautifully said. So I think Kay is he's done very well. To summarize, I think he's thought it very well.
I agree. I think he's a really good announcer. I think even better. I think he's even an even better radio host than he is a broadcaster. Like I've always liked him as a broadcaster, and I know people like get on John Sterling and as he's the radio voice of the Yankees, and he and Kay actually used to be a team together. I think that Sterling is maybe more iconic as an announcer as Kay is, but I think Kay is maybe objectively a better announcer.
Who does the Yankees win? Who does that one?
That's John Sterling.
That's Sterling. Yeah.
And he does like the like kitschy home run calls, and every player has like a rhyming nickname or some sort of a thing when they hit a home run. Jeter was El Capitan, very creative. Michael Kay is a big voice in New York sports. He has like a well rated drive home radio station radio show that he does every day.
Yeah, I figure like if you've been the Yankees broadcaster for that long, like you know if you're bad, you'd get moved up. But I also wonder, like I hear him like just ever like on a clip on a highlight, and I'm like, hey, sounds like I like it. Like you recognize him immediately. But I'm not sure if it was like, you know, the thing of like, yeah, I only hear him like a bit, so like I he's fine.
Right.
I personally think, I mean, Toronto Blue Jays a Sportsnet show. I think we have the best play-by-play guy in the league right now, Dan Schulman, who like was on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball for a long time with Boone and Jessica Mendoza, and then resigned, I think, for Sunday Baseball. Still does some ESPN stuff, and then came back to work for the Jays. I think he's so good. I think he's like, one of the best. But anyway, before we like sort of wrap up, was there anybody being interviewed that was like a highlight for either of you?
I think seeing Gerald Williams. I mean, I knew that he had died in February 2020. So I didn't really know how much of a story. I knew they would mention him. Obviously, he and Jeter were very good friends. And like, he's not even that well remembered as a Yankee. He played for a bunch of teams. He wasn't on the team for that long. But the one thing I knew about Gerald Williams is that he and Jeter were buddies. And right. He died in February, I was happy to see that they had done a lot of his interviews before then, and he must have been sick when they were doing them. So it was great to hear from him. I think that it was hearing from Clemens was cool.
I love Clemens.
The Piazza thing. And it's such BS that he thought it was a baseball. And if it's a baseball, why is he throwing a baseball after Piazza hits it to him? It makes no sense. He was just probably like roid raging at the time. Yeah. But it was great to hear. It was great to hear from him.
Clemens being like, I pitch up and in like that. Don't worry. But like, it'd probably be called a ball now anyway, you know, all this stuff. I think the guy who he goes over and tells the guy he's going to win the costume contest. I thought Clemens was fun. I know. Yeah. But
yeah. No, I love Clemens. I mean, look, I'm a Yankee fan. So at the time, you know, he throws I'm sure I was defending or not defending Clemens because it was sort of indefensible. But I was like, yeah, you know what? They're just guys competing. The bat didn't hit him. But yeah, he obviously shouldn't have thrown the bat at Piazza. Hearing Jorge Posada, and I like when they were comparing some of the Yankees to characters from The Godfather, and like George was Don Corleone, and Jeter was Michael Corleone, who's sort of like the quiet, like cerebral guy, and then they compared Posada to
Fredo.
Yeah, well, no, they said they wouldn't say who Fredo was, but I think they implied it was A-Rod. But no, it was the older Rossini Corleone was Posada. Yeah. And they always talked about Posada being, even though Jeter was the captain, he was the leader. Posada was like the one that would get in your face and be like the angry verbal leader. And you saw it in the brawl with Pedro Martinez.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, like, I know obviously we were going to hear from him, but like, I just really just missed and enjoyed hearing from Jeter again. Like, I just loved his dry sense of humor. Like, I just missed him being in my life. Because, like, for me, like, I grew up, my favorite player was Andy Pettit. Like, I was a lefty pitcher growing up. So I always I idolized him. I wore number 46. He was my favorite player. But obviously, he only plays every 5 days. For Jeter, this guy was, and same for you, Jordan, obviously, he was in our lives more so than basically anyone besides our immediate family. Like, for every single day from April through October, he was in our lives every day for three and a half hours. And then obviously a post game with interviews and stuff. Like, he was just so much of a focal point of my life from the time I was 6 until 24, which is a monumental chunk of your development life. So like, to have him gone and really, like, again, not really be heard from much until now, I just really miss hearing from him. I love his dry sense of humor. He's so funny, so quick-witted. So sarcastic. I just missed having him in my life, and here having him for these 7 hours was just delightful.
Yeah, I watched it all pretty much like in a day, and I kind of was like I was gonna space it out more, and I really just thought it was really well done and really good. I just like kept putting on the next episode. I thought it was really good, and I do think there is something to it just being like Jeter, and he does have like he is not the world's biggest personality, but his personality is so inviting and charming, and like, you know, it does suck you in a little bit. And I think also, yeah, that the fact that he was so, you know, they talk about this in the doc that he just didn't, you know, I mean, I love the response he gives when the guy, when whatever that journalist's name, I don't even care what his name is, but the guy who's like calls him colorless, and but right before that, he's saying like, yeah, he's the type of guy you would never ask because you think like, oh, well, Jeter answer this? Like, nah, I don't know. He probably won't answer, so I'm not going to ask it. And Jeter says like, how would he even know? Like, he would never ask me. Yeah. While I disagree with a lot of what that guy said, I think the point of like, yeah, Jeter, like, I think you do have to be good to be the face of a franchise and continually sort of be able to like, you know, the fact of like, that's not a question for me. You know, you got to go ask somebody, you know, you have to be charming to a degree, right? To be able to like, not have people be frustrated with you, especially New York media. They talk about that too. The zoo of New York media. Of like, you look at that picture of like, when they zoom out of all of the both cameras and microphones in his face, like, boy, it's like easy to say like, well, you're a celebrity. Like, you get to play baseball every day. Like, who cares? You know, who cares what you know, you're suffering. But like, boy, that's a lot of most people couldn't handle it. Like, you know, so yeah, he is just this charming dude. And I didn't grow up with him. And like, yeah, playing, I root for a team that directly rivals the Yankees. So it's just like, no reason I should have like come out of this thing being like, I love it. And I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was really, really good.
Even in like, in his Hall of Fame speech, one of the first lines he says, he calls out like the one person that doesn't vote for him. I think if someone else does that, they're like, what a jerk. Yeah, he's calling the one person out, but he just does it in a way that everyone laughs. It's funny. He does it in this charming way that it plays. Like, that's like A-Rod, for instance. Like, everyone's like hating on him for being like a douchebag for saying something like that. But Jeter, it just plays. Everything he does works.
A-Rod would have to call out the 85% of people who didn't vote for him.
Exactly.
Which is why he won't be giving the speech.
Yep.
Yeah.
But no, I completely agree with that too, that Derek Jeter was probably no person that I've watched on TV in my life more than Derek Jeter.
Yeah,
and again, like, yeah. had multiple posters, not just of him, but of the, and I don't like the even though, I mean, I love all the players, I hate when they say the core four, because I think it completely erases Bernie Williams. I see it more as like the fab five or whatever you want to call it, because Bernie Williams is just as big a part of the teams as Pettit and Rivera and Posada and Jeter. But he was the one guy, and you mentioned Pettit being your favorite player, Brian. Jeter was my favorite player, with I think Posada and Mo is like a close second. So it was really great. I feel like I got to know him better through this experience of watching the seven episodes. And I think in a soundbite, you're not going to get much in a soundbite for Jeter, and they made that clear while watching the documentary. And it's why I think a lot of people felt like they didn't really know too much about his personal life, and that was completely intentional on Jeter's part. But I think through watching this, you got to see more of his personality. And, you know, it was so great hearing from him. And, you know, if they came out with a Captain part two about, like, you know, in 10 years, about the next 10 years of his life, I would watch that as well.
Mm-hmm. So that's the Captain. Who's next? We've had The Last Dance. We had Man in the Arena. And now we have the Captain. Who gets the next big sports doc treatment?
I mean, my first off, I feel like the Kobe one is probably like in the works now, right? I feel like that's going to be something that's going to be a big one. Obviously, it'll be a little bit different since I'm sad he wouldn't be able to be a part of it, but I feel like that's going to be a wild one when they put that one together.
I feel like Tiger Woods feels like he's I close can see it. Too.
Yeah, I feel like they've had a couple. I know like HBO did something on him a little bit. I think it was like a 2-hour thing, not like this seven part, 8-part. That like these have been, but I feel like HBO's done something like that. I feel like there's been a lot of books written about Tiger, so I think there's stuff there. So, but yeah, I'm sure there's got to be more coming.
So they've done basketball, they've done baseball, maybe they go in the football direction.
We got the Gretzky. We get the Gretzky doc. I feel like he's like going to be more boring than Jeter. I thought Jeter was fun. I don't think Gretzky. I don't know if there's like fun upside on Gretzky.
Here's the thing with Gretzky. Like, I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm kind of a casual hockey fan. I've like sort of recently become more of a Rangers fan, and I really do like watching hockey, and it's sort of, I think, surpassed basketball for me as my third favorite sport. But there's really no debate. Like, no one argues as to who the best hockey player is. And I think that you talk about Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. The whole thing's going to be about how he was the greatest. He was the best one. Like with Michael Jordan, there could be a debate. You know, Derek Jeter's not the best baseball player, but there could be a debate as to who the best baseball player is Babe Ruth. But I think the fact that, you know, Wayne Gretzky documentary, yeah, I'm sure we'll learn more about his upbringing and his family, but am I really interested in that? I mean, I'd probably watch, because if it's the same people making the documentaries, they've done a good job. I just wouldn't be super excited about that. I'd rather see like the Antonio Brown documentary, which would be a total train wreck.
Yeah, or like I said, like an A-Rod one. I mean, A-Rod, that would be
A-Rod would be great.
And I feel like he'd be so open to it. I feel like he would feel like he could spin it and like make it his own thing. And I feel like if he got so involved, it would be even more of a train wreck. So I think that would be even better. So I feel like that could work a lot.
Yeah,
you ever read the Torrey book? Yeah, I believe it's called The Yankee Years. I feel like you could make a documentary.
I've read it. Yeah, but yeah, definitely.
I'm looking at like the top biggest inner workings of the last like 25 years. You got like Jerry Rice, Ronaldo.
Well, we could do one on Aaron Judge, maybe Aaron breaking Judge. 61 this year.
He's Griffey. 51, so. Griffey could be fun. Griffey could be fun.
Yeah, I think they did. They also did one on him. Didn't they do an hour? I think I did an MLB Network one. MLB Network did like an hour on him.
Oh, did they?
I think so. Yeah. Or maybe he narrated it. He said like, oh, like I would like, what would you do if like the Yankees were the only team left in baseball? He's like, I would retire. Like, I would never go play for them.
Imagine how many home runs he would have hit in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
If they've done all that, because then I was like, oh, you know, it looks like Serena just had her like last big man. And like, yeah, they've done that one too. They did the movie King Richard last year, so that was quite good. But like, they've already done apparently a Venus and Serena doc. So I don't know. I feel like the two big things right now, it does feel like every few months there's like one of these docs, the like long extended, like, you know, this one individual. And then the other thing I think is going to be, I think they're doing a bunch of similar to F like Formula One Netflix shows. I think they're doing a golf and a tennis and there's one other one they're doing. I feel like those are like the big sports thing coming. But anyway, this has been the captain. Very much appreciate it. I know that Rob Cicinino, if you're hearing this, podcast listeners,
kid, come on.
I don't know. This is
there's no way any of the three of us are podcasting on the network ever again. We're all getting fired after this is released. Are you kidding?
Is this getting made feed released?
It's going to be like Steinbrenner and Winfield after this. We are being blacklisted from RHAP. We're never getting back on.
One day there'll be a 7-part documentary about the making of this podcast and how it never made air. Yeah.
Can I end with a Jeter story from my life?
Can we do? We'll do plugs and then you want to end with the Jeter story?
Does it have Seeds Baby in it or no?
It does not. It's not a poem. Okay. It's just a story. I think it's a very quick story.
You want to do plugs quickly? Brian, you want to do plugs first?
Sure. You could follow me on Twitter at @CohenBrian_ for podcasts. I just covered the challenge with the great Ali Lasher. So subscribe there. Yeah. RobWizWebsite.com/challengefeed. Right now it's the Challenge USA with Challenge 38, or I don't even remember what number is next. 38 or 39 is probably coming sometime in the winter. So look out for that.
Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, so Survivor season is coming back soon, so I'm looking forward to getting back into the Twitch this week in Survivor history. We'll be doing more trivia based on the history of Survivor, and I have some potential things in the work as well, which I'm not really going to touch on yet. Ooh. But it involves potentially some recent Survivor players doing some trivia. It's not really planned yet. Ooh. But it's coming in the hopefully near future.
Fun. All right, let's hear your Jeter story.
So when I think it was I would guess probably my 8th or 9th birthday. So this is like 98, 99. Jeter's has at least two championships under his belt at this point. Or I guess it's my guess is it's 99. I think it's probably May of 99. I have a birthday at this like stock car racing. And I don't know, stock cars, like the like remote control cars that you can race around a track. So I had my birthday here. And for the birthday cake, we got a this like sheet cake with a printed picture of Derek Jeter. So one of the things I knew about Derek Jeter growing up, I think my mom maybe had a little bit of a crush on Derek Jeter. She thought he was very cute. Mm-hmm. And she liked a specific part of Derek Jeter. So the person who worked at the party brings the cake out. And I say, after we sing happy birthday, I say to this lady in front of all my friends, save the butt for my mom. My mom loves Derek Jeter's butt. Sorry, mom, if you're listening to this.
We end that there. That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right. That was our show. What a delightful story from Jordan to end things off there. It's a wonderful time of year. Baseball season, the playoff race is certainly heating up. I would love for the Toronto Blue Jays to make up some ground on a struggling Yankees team, although Aaron Judge seems to beg to differ that they are a struggling team. I bet he breaks the 61 home run record at least. I don't know that he can get to the Bonds level, but I think the Maris record he could get to certainly, which would be fun. And then we have playoffs. So of course the NFL season right around the corner, as well as college football, college basketball, all sorts of fun things. Basketball actually not too far away as well. Hockey as well. So a fun time of year as we stroll into the fall. Sad that the summer is going to be wrapping up soon, but for us sports fans, it's a delightful time. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another show. If you have suggestions for sports that we should be covering here on the Off Speed Podcast, feel free to send me a message. You can email me grace@postshowrecaps.com, or you can send me a DM on Twitter, send me a tweet. I'm @HiFromGrace. My DMs are open. I am doing all sorts of other stuff here on Rob as a podcast, as well as on Post Show Recaps, covering A League of Their Own, fun baseball show that dropped on Amazon Prime, The Sandman, a fantasy show with DM Philly, What We Do in the Shadows, covering that with Lindsay Wilson, and of course, House of the Dragon is happening. 10 million plus people watching each week. If you are one of those people, you should be checking out Mike Bloom and I recapping the episode as soon as it ends. We get that podcast in your feed as quickly as humanly possible, along with so much other coverage during the week. If you're a book reader, you can check out the book club with Taryn, Philly, and Josh. Josh and Rob, I know, are covering the episode each week. And LaTanya and Starks and Josh Wiggler are doing a season-by-season comparison between House of the Dragon and the first season of Game of Thrones. Anyway, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with more off-speed coverage. Until then, the podcast is over.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry?
Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.